June 4th, 2007 will come to order. We have one, let me just say first that we will not be hearing House Bill 3514 today. We are going to open a public hearing on the bill we carried over from last week, House Bill 2001. Paul?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2001, the -2 amendments replace the bill. And what it does is it establishes a tax accountability commission consisting of 14 members, and the membership is listed on the bill. What the commission is to do is to review and audit, and the term audit, we have an amendment prepared for that because it does have some legal connotations related to the Secretary of State. So we do have an amendment to change that. But they're to review a list of tax expenditures, and there's a blank percentage of the most expensive of tax credits, both personal and corporate, established as a review list, and then on or before January 1, 2009, findings and recommendations are to be presented to the legislature. A couple of things that the commission is to do is to review all the expenditures and then establish a regular schedule for review of tax expenditures for repeal in the future. And it makes recommendations toward objective criteria for measuring whether a proposed tax expenditure is likely to accomplish its stated objectives. So some of the things that the committee has talked about as you've considered various credits and through your analysis of the tax expenditure report. The amendment does authorize the Legislative Revenue Office to staff the commission along with the Department of Revenue, Secretary of State, and Department of Administrative Services, and it does provide for authority to my office to reimburse commission members for expenses and necessary travel for meetings. So there would be a fiscal impact based on those expenses.
Thank you. Do we have a fiscal yet?
We do not, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. It's my intention today, let me ask first, this requires an additional amendment to deal with the issues you raised.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. It's my intention today that as we do the public hearing on House Bill 2001, we use the -2 amendments as a framework from which we discuss it. It's a very different bill than the original bill. So there's no need to make comments on the original bill. That was pretty well taken care of the last time we heard it. Also, I would note that the House reconvenes at 2 o'clock. We are going to try to stay longer than that, but we could be called to the floor at any time based on the call of the House. So we're going to try to move along as expeditiously as we can. I have four people signed.
The same
people signed up. Let's start with the Secretary of State's office. Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Elon Hassan for the Oregon Secretary of State's office. I'll be very brief. The -2 amendments, taking out the words "and audit" would avoid a potential legal conflict issue with the bill. The rest of the bill we're totally neutral on. The constitutional issue is the Secretary of State is the auditor of all public accounts. So to the extent this would become a public account at any point, there might be a constitutional issue there. And this would just make it clean if we took out the word "and audit" in, I think it's section 2 of the -2s.
Page 2, line 11, I believe.
I think that's right.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Questions? Thank you very much. James Mulvey, Liz Franco, and Marcia Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I will be very, very brief as well. My name is John Mulvey. I'm representing Service Employees International Local 503. Just want to express our support for the bill, including the Dash 2 amendments. Our members are, of course, always concerned with inefficiencies at the state, and we are on the front lines of fixing those problems every day. In that spirit, we are absolutely supportive of anything that the committee can do to bring these tax breaks under further scrutiny. And that's probably all I have to say.
Thank you very much.
Liz Frankel for the League of Women Voters, and I've been here before discussing this very issue, hoping that something would happen, and delighted it is. The League of Women Voters, we did inadvertently in our text, which you will see, left out environment in the list of purposes for tax expenditures. We have had a long history beginning with the very first tax credits, pollution tax credits, and this has been a major concern of the League. I would very much like to have you look at page 2, line 23 of the Dash 2s, and add public benefits before or. It's a very simple amendment, and I think probably public benefits is what we're all talking about anyway, but it's nice to be explicit about public benefits. In the interest of time, I will suggest that even if you would like to pass this today, which would be lovely, you could always do a conceptual amendment on this one.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Chair Bernhardt and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm on the Public Policy Committee of the American Association of University Women. We have approximately 2,000 members in the state of Oregon, with our branches ranging from Lakeview to Lake Oswego, Astoria to Wallowa County. Over the past four sessions, we have looked at the whole issue of funding government in Oregon, not only the state government, but local governments and how it all fits together, so much so that in 2005, when outsiders were doing a workshop at our state convention in Seaside instead of playing on the beach, 30 or 40 of our members attended the workshop, and one of the things that they asked at the end of the presentation was, what about the tax expenditures? Have you been able to get rid of any of the tax expenditures? So I think the time is now. This is only a piece of tax reform. Speaking directly to the Dash 2 amendments, there are a couple of things. You have a committee of 14 with a simple majority. Even-numbered committees are always a problem if you have a simple majority or if you need a majority for a quorum. So you might want to consider adding, I would say, an additional public member and making it 15. The other concern that I see is in the bill, it speaks especially to tax credits, and it seems to speak especially to tax credits that are of the income tax type, and does not seem to speak directly to the property taxes. And if you take a look at the tax expenditure book, which is the same size as the state budget, I got it in the three-hole punch so that I could use it a little bit easier. You will see that the property tax exemptions and partial exemptions are actually a huge amount of money, and that impacts local government. And you will also read on the preface pages that local government is already impacted by the way that we value property now, the way we allow property values to be capped even if the actual market value is higher. And what you're talking about in tax reform or in looking at tax credits is the interrelationship between the state's need for expenditures and the local governments being funded mainly through property tax. So without looking at property taxes or without having somewhat of a direction to look at property taxes, the commission might tend to only look at those income tax credits. And so that's one of the other concerns that we have. Local governments now have only about $5.30 of $19.91 dollars to spend of the $10 cap altogether. And if anyone would want a spending or taxing 101 for local governments, let me know. I serve on a district board where this impacts us every single day as we're making decisions. So it's a piece of tax reform. It's not the only thing on tax reform, and the committee needs to look at the property tax exemptions as well.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? I have a couple. The most recent testimony, Marcia, raises a couple of points for me. I noticed that in on page 2 of the Dash 2 amendments, lines 11 through about 15, there's a statement of what the commission would review, and I'm assuming that among the things that ought to go in that section, that sentence, would be something about property taxes, is what you're suggesting.
Yes, making it very clear, although if you read a general thing, maybe somebody would go there, but they might not be as tempted to go there if they didn't think it was in their direct charge.
Thank you. And we may want to make a change in one of the big letter items from line 22 on to page 3, line 15, that would be explicit about property taxes, and I think that might deal with the issue you're raising.
Yes.
Thank you. One other question, if I may, for all three of you. There are two blanks in the bill on page 2, line 12 and line 13. I wonder if we may or may not end up with a sentence that looks like this one, but assuming we did, what ought to go in those blanks, in your opinion, if you have an opinion?
As a matter of fact, on that, I was hoping to have the word public benefit come in, but we finally decided that if it went in, it belongs.
Right.
So that's up to the drafters, but our concern is that we do make that explicit.
Thank you. And the question I'm asking is, if we maintain the form that we have in this amendment, there are two blanks actually in the amendment that would call for a special, I guess, emphasis on the top most expensive expenditures in the corporate tax credit and the top most expensive expenditures in personal income tax credits. And if you had an opinion about what ought to go in those blanks.
Because, quite frankly, that's where this issue comes up. Expensive or not, the real question is the cost versus the benefit.
Ah, now I understand what you're saying. Thank you. You're avoiding answering my question, but you're answering a more important one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You've got it.
I appreciate it. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Chair Barnhart, Marcia Kelly from the American Association of University Women. I think that you would be better served to talk to staff about the type of a workload and make some realistic evaluation of how much you can do in a 18-month period of time with a committee of 15, and a lot of them are public members. And so I would defer to staff. I would also, however, still make sure that you include some things on the property tax, because I think that that's one of the places where we can strengthen the infrastructure of local government.
Well, it does sound to me, Marcia, that we ought to consider Liz's suggestion that we simply avoid using a number at all and instead talk about these basic considerations. And that makes I think that makes some sense. Thank you. Other questions for this panel? Yeah, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it, and I appreciate the discussion that you've had here, is it contemplated then that by bringing property taxes in as a high-level item of discussion, that what we would be discussing there would be the possibility for an actual constitutional change or revision of some sort relative to the property tax exemptions that exist under 5 and 50? Or is there another commission that's being formed during this legislative session interim that will actually reach out and discuss those items which affect both state and local, and more particularly the local governance, particularly with regard to the extension or failure to extend in multiple years the federal forest safety net and the undergirdings of the local property tax monies that would be available for because of the lack of being able to forest?
Thank you, Representative Butler. I think that's a great question to ask as we're looking at the Dash 3 amendments for this bill. Thank you. Other questions or comments? Is there anyone else who would like to be heard today on House Bill 2001? Yes, ma'am, please come forward.
House Bill 2130. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Doris Penwell from the Association of Oregon Counties. When you talk about the tax expenditures, both income and property, I think that's legitimate to look at both sides because you can't look at the whole tax system unless you do. I really think that you need to look at the membership of the commission to be sure that you have some local government representation on the commission if you have are talking about property taxes and how they're used. I think that's only fair, and those people know how it works. So I think this would be a very legitimate thing to look at, and it would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Anyone else would like to be heard on House Bill 2001? If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2001 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 582. Is that yours? Paul.
House or Senate Bill 582B comes to you from the Senate, from the Senate Revenue Committee. What the primary purpose of the bill is to clarify and make some modifications to Senate Bill 853, which was approved by the 2005 legislature. What Senate Bill 853 did was to establish a credit to encourage donations to newly created university development funds, and it specified the credit and how it was to work. Those funds are designed to provide capital for innovations to help transition them into marketable products. What Senate Bill 582 does is it modifies the management of donations to university development funds. It leaves the 60% income tax credit unchanged from current law, so we do not assume any revenue impact in the next three biennia. It modifies the general fund recapture provision, which is in the original 2005 law, to allow university development funds to retain use of credits up to a cap amount, which is $8.4 million. So that would essentially act as a line of credit for the university research funds. It does direct that university venture development funds be managed by university or affiliated foundation. It caps administrative assessment costs at 3%. Of the fund's average annual balance. It establishes a legislative reporting requirements for university development funds.
Thank you very much. And we have one member of each legislative body with us today. Please, gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and colleagues. For the record, Frank Morse, State Senator from District 8, Albany and Corvallis. The genesis of this bill arose out of discussions in the Oregon Council on Knowledge and Economic Development. And you recall that that was replaced by the Oregon Inc. legislation of last session, the 2005 session. And the issue that arose that needed a solution was when you're looking at translating inventions and technology that emerge out of the university research, how do you fund that at its earliest stage before it is scaled up and it's, so to speak, bench ready for venture capitalists? And this bill arose out of that discussion through AUCAD, and it was a bill that came through on the AUCAD agenda and is now on the Oregon Inc. agenda. And what the bill does is it provides that earliest stage funding for ideas and concepts and technologies that arise out of the research of our universities. The bill, it was originally Senate Bill 853, and it had some issues that were that had been raised by the Department of Revenue and the Attorney General with respect to some of the language. So it foreclosed the opportunity to actually go out and raise the funds. And we're back in this session to make amendments and to tune the bill to where it will actually perform the way it was intended. The substantive portion of the amendments in this session is what you would call the evergreen portion, which allows the maximum tax credit, as staff has referenced, at $8.4 million, $6 million for OUS and $2.4 million for OHSU, that as those tax credits are essentially used by receiving donations that have a tax credit effect to the donor, that as the inventions then generate revenue and income, the respective foundations would have the authority then, they would retire that tax effect back to the general fund and then reissue additional tax credits to backfill. So it becomes a perpetual line of credit to fund this earliest stage of development. The one thing that this bill does, I think a little bit creatively, is that we are asking the federal government, not asking, we're just exercising our right, to have the federal government participate in this research and development and commercialization effort by virtue of the federal deduction for a charitable contribution. And we don't have to ask for waivers. We don't have to ask for permission. We can take it and use that effectively here in Oregon. So with that by way of background, I would defer to my good colleague, Representative Butler, who has been also instrumental in this legislation.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Representative Tom Butler from District 60, and it was my pleasure to assist with both in the OCED as well as the Oregon Innovation Council with Senate Bill 853 from last session. And in large part, what Senate Bill 582 does is it doesn't change the law the way that we have intended to go ahead and assist in raising this capital on behalf of the universities for inventions and this angel capital, in effect, to get the commercialization of the research. It merely provides, in large part, the mechanics of how it's to be done. Working with the Treasurer, working with the Secretary of State, working with the other agencies that assist us in this process, mostly the Treasurer and Department of Administrative Services, as to how we can best assist in raising these funds. And this was left in part, some of the mechanics were left kind of up to the administrative rule process, and we found that some of those are just insurmountable, that we needed the assistance of the Treasurer. The Treasurer came on board and worked with us in Senate Bill 582 and changing the way that the venture capital monies would be raised. Again, the fiscal impact is still what it was last time. That is, we intend to raise a total of $14 million through tax credits available at the university campuses, as Senator Morris has defined and outlined. But then this also then affords us the ability to use a portion of the itemized deductions, which cause the state or the federal government to pitch in and help us to raise the money that we're actually converting to venture capital money on the campuses. So with that, and in part, this is a mechanics bill to assist us to accomplish what it was that we passed in law and statute last session to assist in these universities in being able to take advantage of the tax credit. And to be able to then use that tax credit to commercialize research on the campuses.
If I might offer,
yes, please.
Mr. Chairman, in light of the previous discussion and the amendments in 2001, this bill fits perfectly in that mindset in terms of what are the intended impacts of the tax credit and are they realized? There's a direct connection with these tax credits to outcomes. And they will be reported, as you read in the bill, and measured back to the legislature in terms of the impacts. Are they working or are they not working? And if they are working, and you have that revenue stream that is coming back through royalties and licensing fees, that then it can be re-upped and renewed, but only in that event. Otherwise, it sunsets.
By its own terms,
it sunsets. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Because if I understand it correctly, the way this thing is put together is you only get to issue additional credits as the old ones are paid off.
Success.
So if there's no income stream, then no new credits are issued.
That's correct.
Thank you. Thank you. Questions for this panel? A very clever idea.
Thank you. I just would like to put a pitch in asking for your support. Interestingly enough, this bill, as you will recall, last session emerged through both committees and both chambers with a 100% affirmative vote. And so far, we're on that same track again. would enjoy your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Senator Representative. Richard Linton, Mary Ellen McGillan. Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I wanted to first certainly acknowledge.
And for the record, would you
say for the record, it's Richard Linton, Vice President for Research, University of Oregon. Also, I'm co-chair of the Commercialized Research Committee of Oregon, Inc. So to begin, and I'll make this very brief, but since Representative Butler and Senator Morse did such a great job, I think, with the overview, I want to begin by acknowledging their support both in the Senate and the House side in terms of moving this legislation forward and the track record it's had in terms of garnering House and Senate support. Wearing both of my hats here from the university side, from the research point of view, this is a wonderful step forward to help support the innovation cycle, moving basic ideas from the lab bench into the marketplace. And there are critical steps along that route where this bill will nicely fund, where there are very minimal opportunities for other types of support. So I really support this from a research university perspective. Also, Oregon, Inc., as Senator Morse referred to, has this as one of its priorities in the legislative package. And, in fact, this is one that doesn't require state-appropriated dollars, but a state tax credit recognizing private investment in the universities and in commercialized research. So it's a unique strategy within the Oregon, Inc. portfolio, and I think will provide a great incentive for private investment in the commercialization of good ideas being generated in the universities. Very, very quickly, the bill, the 582 bill, I think it does a nice job of making sure that we have incentives in place for the fundraisers, meaning that the foundation and the development structure in the universities is aligned around this bill. So we have the money being raised and managed appropriately and consistent with university procedures on that. It incentivizes the inventors. So there's nothing in this bill that would provide a disincentive for an inventor to want to seek out this type of support to move inventions forward toward commercialization. And finally, it, of course, provides incentives for investors with a federal tax deduction and a 60% state tax credit. This is a remarkable opportunity for private donators to the university to step forward and help support commercialized research. So this cycle of investment, invention, and university commitment to the research and the fundraising is all embodied in the legislation, and we're delighted with this 582, which really makes all of that much more effective and eliminates some of the concerns we've had raised by the Treasury Revenue and Department of Justice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Mary Ellen McGillan. I'm the Vice President for Development and Associate Campaign Director from Oregon State University Foundation. And I'm here to speak specifically to the fundraising opportunity and the recommended legislation, the revisions that will make it much more compatible and much more attractive to potential donors. Working with my colleagues from Oregon, the University of Oregon and Oregon Health Sciences, and also from Portland State University, we have spent a great deal of time talking about what were some of the issues that needed to be addressed in this revised legislation so that this would be a more user-friendly, if you will, mechanism for people to, individuals and companies, to support innovation in the state of Oregon. And what we have found is that there's a definite interest on the part of our donors, both, I'll speak specifically for the donors that I have been involved with at Oregon State, but my colleagues from U of O and OHSU specifically have found the same experience, that there's definite donor interest and there's a real desire to support their respective institutions through this creative opportunity that will also benefit the state of Oregon. We have found that our trustees at the Oregon State University Foundation have wholeheartedly endorsed this fund and this opportunity. We have found that the tax credit is an important incentive for donors, along with their motivation to help Oregon and to support higher educational institutions. We have also found that our colleagues in the financial planning and advisors in the community find that the tax credit benefit is attractive to their potential clients who might find this is a great way to support their respective institutions. My colleagues and I believe that for all of our universities, we'll be able to raise the entire allocation in terms of the tax credits that have been designated for each of our institutions. What is left to be resolved for us are these issues that both Senator Morris, Representative Butler, and my colleague Rich Linton have outlined in terms of some of the specifics. Can the tax credit be carried over for a period of years? Will there be a limit on the amount that can be committed? And how can donors invest in multiple institutions in the state? And these being clarified as they have in this revised legislation, we believe will make it very successful and a great opportunity for not only our institutions, but more importantly, to benefit the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you. I wanted to ask a couple of detailed questions. How has the allocation been divided up? Is this a board action on the part of the State Board of Higher Education?
I can address that. We had a group system-wide review that, and we set a number of metrics around the allocation formula, meaning current sponsored research activity, technology transfer, and commercialized research activity currently at the campuses. So there's a formula for the OUS institutions.
Was this a decision by the board?
The board in its administrative rulemaking for the original 853 approved that formula as part of that.
Which institutions will end up being able to participate in these funds?
So the way it works, of course, OHSU has a $4 million separate allocation.
Actually, it's $2.4 million.
For the credit, it's $4 million raised, of which $2.4 million would be the credit.
Thank you. Yes, that's right.
And then for the OUS system, $10 million raised, of which $6 million would be the tax credit. And the $10 million is distributed so that Oregon State receives a little over $5 million, University of Oregon a little over $3 million, Portland State roughly $1 million, and we've reserved $500,000 for the regional campuses in the system to reach out and embrace the full suite of universities, recognizing that even the small institutions have substantive research and would like to be encouraged to show examples of opportunity to move that into the marketplace.
So the answer is that all of them are participating.
So all of them participate. They all have an allocation.
Thank you. And then the last thing I wanted to say simply was that I appreciate very much the activities at the University of Oregon and at Oregon State that you two represent. The universities have become over the fiscal crisis years since the passage of Measure 5 to be enormously entrepreneurial, very much involved in the economic development of the state in addition to educating students. And I personally appreciate very much the work that your institutions have done in this regard.
Mr. Chair, we really appreciate you saying so.
Thank you very much. Other questions or comments for this panel? Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on Senate Bill 582 today? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 582 and open a work session on Senate Bill 582.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 582 to the floor of the House of Representatives with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves Senate Bill 582 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? I don't see any. Call the roll.
Representative Grimm. Aye.
Representative
Grimm. Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
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 Yes. The motion having received a required majority, Senate Bill 582 will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Butler, will you carry the bill?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, and I do need to declare a potential conflict of interest. For the record, I have already made arrangements with the university foundations to make contributions on behalf of this very laudable cause, because I think that this is truly the way that this is the way that we get capital inventions or inventions and knowledge-based capital inventions capitalized appropriately. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And with that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 582. We are continuing, colleagues, we're continuing to work on House Bill 2966 to see what other alternatives there might be for amendment. We don't have amendments here. I think there has been distributed an option D, C and D, for you to look at, but we're not ready to work it. We're not open for public hearing today, so I'll simply commend that to your review, and we'll get to that, back to this bill, we hope, on Thursday. That's 2966. And Senate Bill 859. We're ready on that one, aren't we? Yes.
We just got the amendment.
Do we have the amendment? We haven't got it yet. Okay. Well, we're not ready. We're not ready on 859. Looks to me like we've finished our agenda. Have we? All right, we finished our agenda. Sorry, we're not ready on the work session on Senate Bill 859. Do we expect to have it before tomorrow?
Yes.
We didn't have a meeting scheduled for tomorrow. Is there any problem with a short meeting tomorrow to consider?
Are we noticed?
Yes, we are noticed to be announced. If there's no problem with a meeting tomorrow, we'll roll this over to tomorrow in hopes that we get the amendments. If we don't, I'll ask staff to notify you. All right. And with that's Senate Bill 859 for tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, we can also make that amendment available to interested parties when we get it.
When we get it. The amendment will be available for interested parties when we have it. And with that, the committee is adjourned.